FabLab Podcast, Episode 6, The Map to Full Potential.
Welcome to the FabLab Podcast, brought to you by FabricatorsFriend.com. If you own or manage a stone shop and would like to reduce your frustration while increasing your profits, you've come to the right place. As the owner of a prominent Pacific Northwest stone shop with over two decades of experience and the author of the book Less Chaos, More Cash, our host knows more than just a little bit about the challenges of owning and operating a shop. You'll hear down-to-earth, real-life solutions you can implement today to calm your shop operation and generate more profit. Thanks for joining us, and here's our host, Aaron Crowley.
Welcome back to the FabLab Podcast, brought to you by FabricatorsFriend.com. Hello, I'm your host, Aaron Crowley, and I am pleased, I am grateful that you've joined us today. We have a fantastic topic we're going to cover in this episode today, the map to full potential. And I think this has great relevance to anybody that owns a business, and more specifically, anybody that owns a granite countertop company, because the work is so hard. And the subject really gets to the point of how to maximize the true potential that a company has. And what we're going to find out is that to reach full potential, we can't do it alone. This is not something that we can simply will ourselves to achieve in spite of our companies, in spite of the people that work for us. It's actually more a matter of how do we harness the power, how do we harness the full potential of not only ourselves, but of our employees, so that the company itself can reach its full potential. To me, in life, one of the great tragedies is watching somebody or a team who has great potential and for whatever reason, disaster, health issues, poor choices, whatever it is, when those things prevent that person or that team from reaching what they're truly capable of, that to me is just such a terrible tragedy. And the same thing is true for a business. Our companies are capable of tremendous things. But what is it that keeps us from accomplishing that? Well, today we're going to talk about this subject. We're going to talk about the map to that outcome. MAP is an acronym for mindset, asset, and persistent. Those three variables, what I like to call the landmark principles of full potential, or what we're going to talk about today. And so let's begin with a definition. What is full potential? You know, it's different for anybody. It would be different for any team. It would be different for any company. And in a sense, we can create our own definition of what our full potential is. But I want to give you a definition to consider as you run your business and as you work to improve your business, but to think beyond just today or this week or next month and the job at hand, getting the job sold, getting them scheduled, getting them cut, getting them installed, and getting paid. To think much broader than that. What is this all working towards? Well, I have found that this focus on our full potential has been very clarifying for me. It has really had a huge impact on my business, my granite countertop shop, Crowley's Granite Concepts. We employ about 25 people. And the principles that I'm going to share today have transformed that organization. And along the way, it has created enormous opportunities for our staff. And it has allowed me the opportunity to experience my full potential. And so let's get into it. The definition of full potential, this probably isn't the dictionary definition, but you could call it the Aaron Crowley definition of full potential, or maybe even the definition of business success. So here it is. The definition of full potential is maintaining an acceptable profit margin while keeping the promise made to the customer with ever-decreasing reliance on the owner. So I'll say that again. The definition of full potential for a company that includes the owner and includes the employees, the sum total of their efforts manifest themselves in the performance of the company. So the full potential of that organization, that enterprise, if you will, is this: maintaining acceptable profit margins while keeping the promise made to the customer with ever-decreasing reliance on the owner. To put it another way, it is making money with less frustration while spending less time involved in the process of making the money and keeping the promise made to the customer. How does that sound? make money with less frustration while working fewer hours. That, to me, is the definition of full potential. When a company begins to pursue that outcome, it lends itself well to some really fantastic results for everybody involved, owner, employees alike. And the outcome is that the business achieves something that it couldn't have achieved otherwise. So, the map. How do we get to that outcome? What are the steps that we follow? What are the landmark principles that I mentioned that end up with that outcome of keeping the company profitable? The company continues to keep the promise made to the customer, which is delivering on whatever the customer was sold when they were sold it, and doing so on an increasing basis without the with a decreasing reliance on the owner's involvement to make it happen. What are those landmark principles? Well, there are three of them. And MAP, if you've ever read my articles, if you've read my book, Less Chaos, More Cash, and The Process, you know I like acronyms. And so this is no different. MAP is an acronym for Mindset, Assets, and Persistence. And we're going to look at each one of those landmark principles to see how we can move our companies towards that definition. So let's get started. So mindset. What is mindset? The first landmark principle in the MAP to full potential has to do with what we believe. Now, the fact is, what we believe is critical. What we believe will absolutely determine whether or not we reach our full potential. You see, we can believe things that aren't true, and that limits us. Take, for example, my belief for many years that I would never be able to afford, or that I couldn't afford, to buy the building our fab shop operated in. Wasn't true, but I was so convinced of it, I never even explored it. Now, this last year, we bought our building, so for the first time in 20 years, I am finally my own landlord. But as I look back 10, 12, 13 years ago, and I now know I could have bought a building 10, 12, 13 years ago, but because I did not believe it was possible, I never looked into it. And so it, in a sense, became a self-fulfilling belief. Same thing is true with the deadly assumption. If you listen to episode 2 of the Fab Lab podcast, I talked about the deadly assumption. That also is a flawed belief, the belief that some work is so simple and obviously important that it need not be explained. And the consequence of that flawed belief is that when we don't explain our expectations to our employees, they can't possibly perform to meet them. And so we make an assumption, they fail to meet our expectation, the job doesn't get done, it costs us money to make it over again, and we're frustrated. It's this vicious circle caused by a flawed belief. Well, there are other flawed beliefs that business owners commonly hold to that limit our full potential. And those two beliefs are this: what we believe about ourselves and what we believe about our employees. I guess those would be the categories. Now, we're going to talk about the flawed belief first. The first flawed belief that a business owner is most likely to hold to is the belief that their business's performance somehow reflects their value. Now, as a business becomes successful, as a business grows, as a business makes money, it's natural, it's common, it's really easy to drift into this mindset or this belief, this enterprise that we've built with blood, sweat, and tears and sacrifice that really probably has our name on it, as my company does. It really is an extension of who we are. In a lot of ways, it's a manifestation of our efforts, of our work, of our ingenuity, of our investments, of our risk-taking. But there comes a point at which the business can become our sole source of significance and security. And as we drift into that kind of a flawed belief where if the business is doing well, we're doing well. But if the business is doing poorly, it affects us negatively. It becomes this emotional roller coaster. It's not only unhealthy, it is going to prevent us from making the necessary decisions that have to be made to move our company forward so that it can reach its full potential. You see, here's the problem with that. When our significance and our security is directly connected to the performance of the company on a day-to-day basis, anything that threatens that sense of security, anything that threatens that sense of significance, is something that we're going to subconsciously avoid. Why would we rock the boat? Why would we upset the apple cart? Why would we put something that is so important to us personally at our very core? Why would we put that at risk? Well, the fact is we can't. It's like human nature automatically gravitates towards self-preservation, and we will find ourselves in this battle needing to make decisions that are necessarily risky, that necessarily put that sense of security at risk, and it becomes really difficult to make those decisions. And so the decisions we make turn out to be decisions around stabilizing and maintaining and preventing anything from altering the status quo that we're comfortable with. Well, if that's the belief that we're operating from, that our own self-worth, our significance, and our security is connected to the performance of the company, we limit the company's potential. So that's the first flawed belief. The second flawed belief has to do with what we believe about our employees. Now, if, like I said, you've listened to episode 2 or 3 where we talked about why employees fail to meet our expectations, it's possible that our employees' performance, I would argue, resulting from our poor delegation and our poor management, but nonetheless, there can be evidence that would lead us to conclude that our employees maybe aren't as capable of performing as we are capable. And we can come to this point where we believe there are certain tasks that are simply too important, too critical to be delegated or to be risked, there's that word again, by delegating it to an employee who might make a mistake or might not perform that adequately. Well, that is a limiting belief. The belief that employees are not capable of operating at the level that we operate is a flawed belief. And here's the problem with that belief system. Remember, the goal of full potential is to maintain your profitability while keeping the promise made to the customer with ever-decreasing reliance on the owner's involvement. Now, that creates a conflict. There's tension there. If I am attempting to build a business that achieves profits and product delivery in my absence, employees have to step in to fill the roles that I might have otherwise filled if I was there. And so now I have to make this decision. Am I willing to take the risk of delegating certain tasks that I might otherwise prefer to hang on to myself because it makes me feel more secure? Or do I believe enough about my employees and their potential and their capabilities and their capacity for excellence and performance? Do I believe that enough to actually let them carry out those tasks? So let me ask you a question to get at the heart of this. Are there tasks in your business that you are currently doing right now, running your fab shop, that freak you out if you were to think about delegating those to somebody in your company? What are the tasks that you have been unable or unwilling to let go of? If you have tasks like that, that the company absolutely depends upon you to perform them, you may be operating from this. You may not be, but you may be operating from this flawed belief and this belief system that, well, I'll just never find an employee, or I don't have any employees who are capable of performing this task, so I've got to do it myself. If that's what you believe, evaluate that. Consider that. Spend some time getting at the heart of that. What is it that you really believe? Because the fact is this, until we realize that our value, our significance, and our security is so much greater and so much more important than anything the performance of our business could ever provide, until our value, significance, and security is rooted in something concrete and immovable and lasting and enduring outside the business that cannot be shaken when the business falters or slows down or struggles. And until we get to the point where we absolutely believe that our employees, human beings, just like you and me, are capable of great things if given the opportunity and the proper instructions, i.e. the process, fully explained in my book, Less Chaos, More Cash. When we begin to operate from those beliefs, we begin to break out of those limiting beliefs that would prevent us from reaching our full potential. So there you go, mindset. What we believe about ourselves and what we believe about our employees is so important. So if you're operating from those flawed beliefs, time to start changing your mind. Time to start finding your significance and your security in something lasting and enduring and eternal outside of your business, so that you can be freer to risk to make decisions in the interest of reaching your full potential. Likewise, if you have a limited view of your employees' potential and their capabilities, time to start changing that belief so that you can get to a point where you can delegate that work to capable, well-trained, properly instructed employees can take over for you so that the company can continue to be profitable, so the company can continue to deliver the product and service on time as promised, even when you're not there. That's full potential. Okay, so mindset, we've covered that. That's the first landmark principle in the map to full potential. The second principle is assets. Now, I want you to forget everything that comes to mind when you hear the word asset. I am not talking about equipment and vehicles and hardware and software, items that are put on the balance sheet and depreciated and expensed. In Oregon, you know, in Washington County, where my business operates, those assets I also pay personal property taxes on. So any and every idea you've got about assets up to this point, I want you to set that aside for the purpose of this conversation. Those assets cannot in and of themselves propel you and your employees and your company to full potential. They are not what is going to get you there. They may help, but they're not enough to get you there. So if you're driving, don't write these down. If you're not driving, I would recommend you write these down. The three assets you've got to possess to reach your full potential are these: company vision, incentives, and order through process. So to begin, company vision, the first asset. So a company vision is this. It's really the ultimate reason for the company's existence. Now, I want to ask you a question. If you were to take a poll, gather your employees tomorrow morning, give them a piece of paper and a pencil, and say, I want everybody to write down what you think, why you think our company exists. What do you think the purpose of this business is? And then let them answer, you know, freely. What kind of answers do you think you would get? What do you think your employees believe the purpose of your company exists for? Now, I want to share a quote with you. I might have even shared this in a previous podcast. It just is an amazingly impactful quote that I refer to it regularly. The quote is this: in the absence of conscious thought, the subconscious prevails. In the absence of conscious thought, the subconscious prevails. So let me say this. In the absence of a company vision, the employee's subconscious will take over and fill in the blanks. If you have not given them a conscious vision, the ultimate reason for the company's existence, your employees will naturally come up with their own idea of why the company exists. So let me ask you another question. This might help you understand the gravity of this situation and why having a company vision is so important. Here's the question. Are you driving a vehicle that is nicer than your average employee? Are you living in a home that is nicer than your average employee? Do you take nicer vacations than your average employee? Do you have a more flexible schedule than your average employee? For the most part, that's true in my business. And there's nothing wrong with that. The point is if we have not given our employees a company vision, a crystal clear explanation of why our companies exist, subconsciously, it's human nature, the most common answer to that question will be, well, this is all about the owner. I come in here every day and I measure countertops. I come in here every day and I cut countertops or run equipment or install countertops. I get a paycheck, yes, but really, at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, this is all really about the owner, so that he can drive nice vehicles, he can live in a nice house, he can take nice vacations. Now, there's nothing wrong with you as the owner. You've taken the risks, You've invested the blood, sweat, and tears. I am not saying there's anything wrong with it. There's not. The question is if in the employee's mind, if that is the purpose, if that is the reason for the company's existence, how likely are they to give their 110% full effort every day? Because we're talking about full potential. Are they going to exert maximum performance if it's all about you, the owner? I happen to believe that the answer to that is no. So the point here is if we are going to build an enterprise that reaches its full potential, everybody in the company has got to be giving it their all. And if the only thing, the only reason, the only goal, the only point at the end of the day is that so you can have nice things, people simply aren't going to give their 110% effort if that's the case. That's why a company vision is so important. We have got to have full participation and full performance of all of our staff if we're going to reach our full potential. You can't get there unless all participants are fully engaged. And so we need to have a vision that is larger than ourselves as owners. So here's three thoughts about vision. First, your vision must be broad enough, or I should say, the vision for your company must be broad enough and large enough to invite full participation among all your employees. Two, the company vision must be obviously larger than you, the owner. There can't be any confusion as to whether or not at the end of the day this is about the boss or is this about something bigger. Number three, this vision must be worthwhile and noble. People want a paycheck because they got to pay their bills, but people want to contribute to something that is meaningful, something that has value, something that is lasting and bigger than them. And so that's why a company vision is so crucial. People aren't going to jump out of bed every day and come to work going, yes, the boss gets to buy a new truck if I really work hard today. Not going to happen. But people will jump out of bed and go to work and say, I'm going to give it my all because I know the ultimate goal that we are working towards has meaning. It has something lasting and it's valuable. So let me share with you the Crowley's Granite Concepts vision. I'm not even reading this. I'm reciting it from memory. Crowley's Granite Concepts exists to be a calm, safe harbor from the chaos of the world for employees, customers, and suppliers. You see, I recognized that a lot of people live in chaos. The world is in chaos. And for me personally, this was the vision that I saw my company fulfilling. What if we could build a working environment that became a calm, safe harbor from the chaos of the world outside of our doors, where we were all working towards an end, a well-run, orderly, healthy environment that benefited everybody that set foot inside of our door. So that's our company vision. So one final thought on company vision, the first of the three assets you've got to have to reach your full potential is this. If you want to read more on company vision, buy the book Built to Last by Jim Collins. There's two chapters that deal specifically with company vision, and the book is really about visionary companies that have lasted, that have endured. They're like 100-year-old plus companies that have survived and thrived despite many obstacles, many challenges, product changes, market changes. Visionary companies. So there's a couple of chapters on that. And then there's a chapter on company vision. It just is a great book. So it's Built to Last by Jim Collins. So the second asset you've got to have to reach full potential is incentives. I like to boil those down into two R words, rewards and recognition. Rewards is pretty simple. Those are the financial rewards. And I'm not talking about hourly pay or commissions. I am talking about the additional incentives, the financial return that an employee would receive for making that net profit possible. Remember, the definition of full potential is to maintain acceptable profit margins. So when an employee because of their hard work in pursuing the vision and doing the work every day that needs to be done, contributes to an enhanced net income, an enhanced profit margin. I believe that it is incredibly effective if, like you as the owner that's motivated by net income, if that reward is made available to the employee. See, when the company prospers, it is really important to share that with those who made it possible. So we use it's basically a quarterly profit sharing. I don't even like that term, but for lack of a better term, that's what it is. But I don't put it like, hey, you know what? I was feeling generous this quarter, so I'm going to share some of the increase with you. That is not the spirit with which our profit sharing program operates from. It is, if it wasn't for you and the contribution that you made, we would not have achieved this net profit. And so it's only fair that you receive a relative return. So that's the first thing: rewards, incentives, financial compensation for the results that have been produced because of the employee's contribution. The second is recognition. First R is reward. The second R is recognition. This is the formal and public display of giving credit where credit is due. Now, in a sense, a profit-sharing program is recognition. When you hand somebody a check and say, thank you, you made our net profit possible this month or this quarter or last quarter. Here you go. Well done. That in and of itself is recognition, but so is the vision. And so I'm trying to just convey this, that some people are truly motivated by money and that will actually enhance their performance. There are other employees that simply are not. Financial incentives are not a motivation for working harder. But recognition gets to the heart of every single person. And when you craft a company vision that is larger, more noble, and broad enough to invite their participation, and you set out and say, we as an enterprise are going to pursue this outcome because it's the right thing to do, and I have recognized that we can't get there unless you participate. Will you join me in pursuing this? That's recognition. And that is an incentive. When people realize they are involved in an endeavor that is larger than them, that is meaningful and noble and worthwhile, wow. Talk about standing 10 feet tall and taking pride in the work that they do. So that's part of recognition. I mean, you could do an employee of the month, but those are kind of hard to manage. They're kind of subjective, and they take time to take the picture and put it up on the wall. I would much rather simply go to another man or woman in my company and say, you know what? I recognize your value. I recognize your potential, and I also recognize the fact that if you don't fully invest in where we're going, we're not going to get there. Will you go there with me? That is so powerful. The motivation then becomes something that is something you can't force it. Threats won't do it. For some of those people, even financial compensation won't do it. But that recognition that their contribution is valuable, wow, it's huge. So that's the second asset, incentives of reward and recognition. So the third asset, order through process. Now, again, if you've heard me talk, if you've ever heard me speak at a trade show, if you've ever read any of my articles, or if you've read my book, Less Chaos, More Cash, you know that I am big when it comes to order. Order is the antithesis of chaos, hence the name, Less Chaos, More Cash. By the way, if you haven't bought that book, I encourage you to visit fabricatorsfriend.com. Go to the process page. You will find the book. You will find templates and worksheets that are free on the website for you to download so you can work to implement the principles in the book, Less Chaos, More Cash. But really, I'm going to just briefly discuss it here in case you haven't listened to previous podcasts. Order through process. Just like our company vision at Crowley's Granite says, Crowley's Granite exists to be a calm, safe harbor from the chaos of the world. Human beings thrive in an orderly environment that is somewhat predictable, where there is a rhythm, where there is a groove, where the work is somewhat known and constant. Chaos just wears people out. And so I believe, and not to mention it's expensive, when mistakes and rework and all those things that come out of a chaotic work environment. So I am endeavoring, once again, if the goal is that the company makes a profit while keeping the promise to the customer in my absence, there's got to be order. If I'm not going to be there to maintain it, something has to fill the void to maintain the order. And so really, it's effective delegation. Order is the opposite of chaos. Chaos is not full potential. And so in a nutshell, we delegate effectively when we do three things. When we take the critical tasks that we might otherwise perform ourselves because we don't believe anybody else can perform them, or when we identify tasks that are not being performed well, we follow the process, PRO, order through process. We assign the position that's going to be responsible for the task, first and foremost. Secondly, we define the result that we want achieved in measurable standards. Whether that's timing or tolerances, we define the result that we want achieved. And lastly, we design the operation. We establish the step-by-step, the order with which every step must be performed to produce the result that we want so that the task is performed correctly and on time. So we deliver on the promise we've made to the customer the first time without any mistakes and without any rework, so that at the end of the day, we maintain our profits. Do you see how that works? I can replace myself by utilizing the process. Tasks get done correctly and on time the first time, which means we keep the promise. And when we do that the first time, the company makes money. So we establish order through process. And that is one of the three, that's the third of the three assets that you've got to have at your disposal if your company, if you and your employees and your company are going to achieve your full potential. Now, the last landmark principle, first was mindset, second was assets. The third landmark principle is persistence. Now, I'm not talking about the grinding, grueling contest of wills that is necessary to start and launch and get a business up and running so that it can be successful. I'm not diminishing that at all, but that's not what I'm talking about. Persistence in the context of pursuing our full potential has everything to do with the company vision and the incentives that we have established. Here's what's going to happen if you establish a company vision that is lofty, that's meaningful, that's worthwhile and noble, that's larger than you and broad enough to invite and inspire your company to pursue it with you. Here's what's going to happen. Some situation is going to arise where you're going to have to choose between the vision and remaining true to it or taking the easy way out. And your employees are watching. This is why persistence is so critical. This is why remaining true to the company vision you unveil to your staff is absolutely essential. You must persist in moments of weakness. Let's just say, for example, your company vision mentions the phrase, do the right thing, or something like that, something aspirational, something beyond where you're currently at that you aspire to be in the future. It's inevitable. A point in time will come where you are going to be confronted with a situation where doing the right thing is going to be very, very difficult. It may be very expensive. It may be very costly. Maybe it's going to be very humbling. And every fiber of your being is going to say, compromise. Take the shortcut. Take the short-term perspective and forget about the long-term goal of the company vision. The problem with failing to persist in that situation is that if you have presented your company vision to the team and the team is on board and they're watching, and they will be, failure to remain true to your company vision will kill any and all potential that you have built up by inviting them and involving them in the process. If they see that you are not truly committed to the company vision, that you're willing to compromise in a weak moment or a difficult situation, how inspiring is that company vision really going to be? In fact, I believe it will be actually be worse in the end than if you had never implemented a company vision to begin with, because the morale will suffer and the cynicism, everything they might have thought to be true is going to be confirmed. and you'll lose all the momentum that you might have had. That's the first. The second has to do with the incentives. Warning, I have, over the last 2 decades, well, we're 5 months short of our 20th anniversary, so 19 years and 7 months into owning a granite countertop shop, the number of bonus programs, of profit sharing, I don't even know what you want to call them, profit sharing schemes that I have invented on the fly and implemented with great fanfare only to see them flop. Warning, when you institute an incentive program that is going to reward your team members for their participation, it's a very similar likelihood. The fact is, the same thing is going to happen. You are going to be confronted with a situation where you're going to have to choose. Do I pay the bonus? Do I cut the checks for the profit-sharing program? Money's tight. Cash flow is squeaky right now. Or there's something I'd really like to buy. Once again, you're going to be in a situation where you're going to have to be, you're going to be confronted, where you're going to have to choose to remain true. And if you falter in a weak moment and you come up with an excuse, if you come up with a reason, if you come up with some story as to why the profit-sharing bonus won't work this quarter or can't be paid out next quarter, once again, that motivation, the morale, all of that momentum that is built up will be diminished severely, maybe even permanently. So persistence, once you have gone to the trouble of developing a company vision and inviting your team to participate, once you have gone to the trouble and the work of developing a bonus program or an incentive program or a profit-sharing program where you reward their participation, once you have gone to that work, you absolutely have to persist. You have to keep the long-term goal of full potential in mind, and you have to get past the short-term difficulty, the short-term pain that you might be experiencing in the moment. So that's persistence. The map to full potential runs through your mindset and the things you believe, the assets that you acquire in the form of company vision, incentives, and order through process, and thirdly, your persistence, your willingness to persist, to remain true to the company vision and your incentive programs, even when it hurts. That is the map to full potential. So let me tell you something. The map to full potential works. My business is a living, breathing representation, a validation that these principles wind up at full potential. So to conclude, I hope you have enjoyed this discussion about the map to full potential. I hope that you will consider adopting the definition of full potential, the maintaining of an acceptable profit margin while keeping the promise made to the customer with ever-decreasing reliance on the owner's direct involvement. I hope that you will consider that definition and that you will conclude that it is worthy of pursuing. And here's the great thing about pursuing this with your employees. Everybody wins. The company itself wins because it's stabilized. You have broader participation by the employees. You get to see the full potential that maybe hadn't been realized yet in your employees rise within the organization, and you will see their potential like you've never seen it before. And the greatest thing about it is that it requires you to step back. And who wouldn't want, as an owner, to work fewer hours while still achieving the ultimate goal you set out to achieve, which is to build and run a successful company? So there you have it, folks. The map to full potential. Once again, thank you for joining me on the Fab Lab podcast hosted at fabricatorsfriend.com. If you haven't visited fabricatorsfriend.com recently, I would recommend that you go there, check out our products, our line of fabrication gear, our bulletproof aprons, our stone sleeves, our fab jacket. And if you haven't checked out my book, Less Chaos, More Cash, you can find that there too on fabricatorsfriend.com. Just visit the process page. You can check out the book. And you can check out the forms and the templates that we use in our own business and download them for free. So God bless. Have a great week, and we will see you next time.